Welcome to The Drop, the official podcast of the 130th Airborne. I'm Senior Master Sergeant Eugene Crist from your 130th Public Affairs. Joining me on the pod today is Colonel Patrick Chard, 130th Aerith Wing Deputy Commander, and a special guest. Colonel Chard, we've taken the drop on the road. Will you please introduce our guest?
Boy, we really have taken the drop on the road. You know, I want our folks to really know that we will go anywhere for content for them. Amen. And hopefully they've seen of our most recent episodes that we've been kind of branching out into some new areas of content for the drop, and today is no exception. So we've taken this show on the road, so to speak. Thank you to have Lieutenant Brown here and Senior Master Sergeant Crist here with me, as well as our special guest. And before I name who he is, I want to talk a little bit about how much the work that he does shares in common with our military mission. First of all, our guest today is a leader who must repeatedly craft and mold a team from people who come from different communities and backgrounds, just like we do. Teamwork is vitally important to his profession. While some positions may be a little more glamorous or high profile, success requires everyone to do their job and do it well. Man, that's no different for us. His profession involves a form of aerial delivery where precision and timing are crucial to hitting your target. The same is true for us. Practice, and I mean lots of practice, is fundamental to honing their craft and doing it in concert with their teammates. Man, that's no different than us, right? And just like us, our guests will spend significantly more time in practice and preparing for their mission than actually doing it. So without further ado, Airman of the 130th Airlift Wing, I am proud to introduce Charles Huff, the head coach of the Marshall Thundering Herd football team. Welcome, Coach Huff. Welcome to The Drop.
I appreciate you guys having me. This is truly an honor for me. I fully understand, and oftentimes, you know, sports and leadership are often kind of paired or compared to military. But I first want to say I have the utmost respect for what you guys do. At the end of the day, you know, we win or lose a game and we all go home and hug our families. For you guys, a win or a loss could be fatal. And I truly respect, I know we parallel the two, but trust me, by no means do I think what we do in the athletic world carries the same weight as what you guys do to give us freedom and save our lives, protect our country, protect our borders. So although similar, and although we try as coaches often to parallel the two, just know that the people listening to this podcast, the respect for what you guys do from me is ultra high.
Oh, Coach, greatly appreciate that. You know, the stakes may be a little different at times, but the fundamentals are the same. And I got the opportunity, so folks know, to hear Coach Huff speak to a group of us during a recent event here at Marshall. And I came away so impressed by the leadership vision that he had set for his team this year. And I had to come back and interview you, Coach. I just really did. So thank you again for joining us. So to start things off, could you tell us a little bit about your background and, you know, the coaching experiences that you've had and how you came to Marshall University?
Yeah, I'm originally from Maryland, from the Eastern Shore of Maryland. I played my college football at Hampton University in Virginia. I knew very early in my athletic career that there was a limit on my ability. But I've always, since I was can even remember, I always enjoyed being on a team and working together, and how teamwork and how much you could achieve together, and how you can motivate, and how you can take people from different backgrounds and different areas of the country and different areas of knowledge and get them all to pull together for one common goal. So after I got done playing, I was fortunate enough to get into coaching. And then the roller coaster started. I've started at Tennessee State University. I went to Vanderbilt University. I went to the University of Maryland. Spent some time in the NFL with the Buffalo Bills. Yes. Spent a lot of time at Penn State there. Spent time in Mississippi State. And then the last stop before I got here at Marshall, I was at the University of Alabama for 2 years, which in the sports world is kind of the doctorate level teaching. You know, I got to work for Coach Nick Saban for 2 years. And the beauty of that was not just getting to work for, in my opinion, the greatest coach of all time. Obviously, I wasn't born, you know, when the Lombardis and those guys were coaching. But of my era, the greatest coach of all time. A lot of people just think you go to Alabama, you win a national championship, and it's kind of like Disney World where they just, you know, sprinkle the have fun dust on you when you go in the gates. But I was there. In our first year, we did not win the national championship. We actually came up short. My second year, we won the national championship. So I got to see both sides of what elite failure would look like, you know, from the anticipation of, you know, the team we had and the players we had, and, you know, the anticipation was high and we fell short. Then we came back the next year, and through ultra adversity, because that was the COVID season. So we battled the COVID season. We did not have as good of a team, quote unquote, on paper as we did the year before. But we had a better team, if that kind of makes sense. And I learned it's not about having the best players on the team or in the boat. It's about having the right players on the team or on the boat. And how do you as a coach determine who are the right players versus the best players? Obviously, the better the player, the better the performer, the better the opportunity for the mission to go well. But it's not always about who's the fastest or strongest. You know, it's about who can manage their role the best. And I thought what I learned in those 2 years was, you know, kind of both sides, you know, extreme failure and an extreme success through adversity on both sides. Then I was blessed enough to get the job here at Marshall. I've been here for 3 years, going into my fourth year. Interesting way I came into Marshall, we were a part of another conference, Conference USA.
Yes.
So we started building our model to be productive in Conference USA. Well, after the first year, we switched to the Sun Belt. So then we had to kind of adjust the model to win in the Sun Belt. Well, in between that adjusting, they threw in this thing called NIL and transfer portal.
Yes.
So we had to readjust. So, again, just learning to manage the new landscape and learning how to build a team when buying a team is kind of the way to go now. And still understanding, okay, how do we get the right players in position? Once we get the right players on our team and in position, how do we all lead them when they all may have not chose Marshall out of high school, or they all may have not been, you know, Marshall fans when they were 5 years old? Some of these young men committed to other schools. Some of these young men didn't even know what Marshall was until, you know, they got to high school or, you know, and started playing the game. So that's been the quest that we've been on, and we've been using successes and failures to kind of build to where we are now. And I think it's different because every year is a new year, but every year you're able to use a lot of the lessons, you know, positively and negatively that you have been through, not only as a coach, a players, team, staff, the whole hold on.
You know, I think it's interesting your experience there at Alabama that you mentioned. You know, I can't imagine working in an industry for a fan base that is so devoted as the Alabama fan base is, knowing that that program has performed at such a high level for such a long period of time. You know, the expectation each season is almost perfection, right?
Correct.
Undefeated season, national championship. Like, that is the expectation. And if you don't deliver that year after year after year, I can imagine the pressure that must exist in an environment like that. Now, you tell me, you know, Coach Saban looks like, you know, he's cool and collected, that he's a man who really thinks about what he's doing, and he's very deliberate in his actions. You know, could you just tell me really quickly a little bit, you know, how coming from an environment like that with such high expectations and now coming to Marshall, you know, do you bring some of that with you? I mean, what's your experience been with that?
Yeah. You know, Coach Saban is very intentional about everything that he does. You know, I'll tell a quick story. You guys probably want. He wears the same pair of pants on Monday. He wears the same pair of pants on Tuesday, Wednesday. So if it's Wednesday, he's got on blue slacks and brown shoes. If it's Tuesday, he's got on gray slacks and brown shoes. Or every day he has a routine. And
And it's, does he do that during the year or just during the season?
Just during the season. I mean, okay. He wears his shorts and he plays golf. And, you know, you've probably seen him on the boat with his Yankee shirt on. But during the season, it's the same routine. And I don't know if it is intentional. You know, like he wakes up and says, it's Monday, I'm grabbing my black pants. But it just goes to show that he is so intentional and routine-based.
Yes.
Because in order for you to have sustained success, you got to have a routine. And whenever you are, you know, in leadership, if your routine is not consistent, then you can't expect the people or the players that work for you or around you to be consistent. If you come in one day and everything is happy and you're jumping around and smiling, and next day you're in the dumps, that's the performance that your team will carry. So Coach Saban had a very intentional and a deliberate routine about everything that he did. You know, the yearly calendar, the way we met, the periods of the year where we did certain things, the periods of the year where he talked about certain things because of, you know, adversity that may be hitting, or, you know, you're getting to the end of training camp, everyone's getting a little tired, and he always had a routine with exactly what to say, when to say it, obviously adjusting year by year, but it was always very consistent. You know, people ask me all the time, did you bring anything from Alabama? And I would say I brought the two most important things to be successful in any business: consistency and discipline. And ultimately, whatever you do, wherever you go, you got to be consistent in your work, right? If you're a, you know, a running back, you got to be consistent. You got to do what you're supposed to do, when you're supposed to do it, the way it's supposed to be done. And you got to do it that way over and over and over. And that's why we practice, so we can get that consistency in the game. And then you got to have the discipline to make the conscious choices and decisions to stay consistent, right? You can't say, well, we won a game, so we're going to take practice off, or we won a game, so, you know, we won't watch as much film as we did the next week. You got to have the discipline to stay with your routine to produce that consistency.
Oh, absolutely true. So, you know, let's talk about here at Marshall. So, as you mentioned, this is your fourth season. Tell me a little bit about last year and how that experience shaped your approach for the 2024 season.
Yeah, so I'll go back 3 years ago, or 2 years ago from now. You know, we had a really good team. We beat Notre Dame.
Yep. Big win,
Big win. You know, we ended the season, you know, 9-4 on a 5-game win streak. We won our first bowl game in our tenure. A lot of the players that were on that team had never won a championship, whether it was high school, college, or anything. So we ended that year on such a high. Coming into last season, or the 23 season, we're riding that high. We're talking about, hey, we got to make sure we do the things that got us to this point. Obviously, you change players, you change personnel.
Yep.
Some of the players that were on the team didn't have as big a role the year before. And it's kind of like you're standing behind the starter and you're like, yeah, I can do that. But you really don't know all the work that goes into it for the starter to go out and consistently do those things.
Yeah.
So we come into the 23 season. We're riding high. We go on a 4-game. We roll off 4 in a row to start the season. We beat Virginia Tech here at home. We're 4-0. Everybody's riding high. We go to NC State. We lose to NC State in the fourth quarter. You know, we battled, but we came short. And what started to happen, you know, we were riding the success and the energy of the year before. And we were able to go win 4 games in a row. And now all of a sudden, this is becoming easy.
Yeah.
And that's when, very complacent, you know, and that's when, in my opinion, right after the NC State game, that's when the first crack in the floorboard started.
Yep.
Because we didn't know, and I say we as being the leader taking ownership of it, we didn't know how to go back to winning. We were just winning. We didn't know how to go back to what it took to win. We were just kind of, well, coach says practice, we practice. Coach says meet, we meet. You got to realize we reeled off 9 in a row and then 4 more. So it had been a while before we had tasted defeat.
Yes.
And then once we tasted it, we weren't sure how to get the taste out of our mouth, because a lot of the guys that had got us there were gone. So a lot of the guys that were stepping into these roles, all they knew was winning. And that's when, you know, you pair that with adversity of injuries, and now all of a sudden you're playing, you know, other guys are playing more. You got transfer portal guys who come in, and transfer portal, just so everybody, it's like speed dating. Like you bring them in on Monday. You meet with them. You show them the campus. Hey, you want to be here? Yeah, great. He leaves on Tuesday. You know, you bring another one in on Tuesday. So you don't really get a chance to really dive into who these guys really are.
Sure.
And, you know, I truly believe that, you know, a man's character is not formed in moments of greatness. It's formed and defined in moments of adversity. And that's what started to happen. All of a sudden, we don't win a game. And, okay, now it's starting to and we never got to the point of breaking, but we never got to the point of fixing the issues. And I'm not talking about schematically. It's just, okay, well, we lost. All right, we'll go back and do the same thing we did last week. Well, that's not the case. You got to figure out, okay, what do we need to do different? That doesn't mean all of a sudden, you know, we practice at 6 a.m. instead of 2 p.m., but what do we need to do individually and collectively different? And from there, we went on a 5-game losing streak. And that's when all of the blemishes, the bruises, the errors really showed up in our program.
Yeah.
And I look back on it as a leader, and a lot of these bruises or scars had shown their head before, but it was covered up by success.
Sure.
And because we weren't able to address it then, what it did was when it showed up, you know, in droves. It showed up strong. So we went on a 5-game losing streak. And I credit the coaching staff and the players because at that point, the program had a decision to make. We could have lost the rest of the season.
Yeah.
But we rallied behind our core values. We rallied behind ultimately what the makeup of this program is, which is hard work, discipline, staying together. And we were able to get bowl eligible. We were able to finish the season on a high note. At the end of that season, I really stepped back and looked and said, okay, what are some things that we need to fix? Brad Smith, our president, is a phenomenal leader. And
he is, absolutely.
He's done some great things. A Marshall grad, you know, went out to Intuit and created TurboTax, has come back to really help the Marshall, not only community, but this university.
And what a guy, too,
A great guy. And he recommended me reading the book Extreme Ownership.
So, authored by a Navy SEAL, former Navy
authored SEAL. by a Navy SEAL. It's a true military, you know, military read, but it talks about the key components of leadership and ultimately taking extreme ownership as the leader over everything that goes wrong. Mm-hmm. Not, well, I told them. Well, you didn't tell them good enough, obviously. Or not, well, they should know this. Well, obviously they don't. So I read that book and I really went back and looked at all of the opportunities that I had to take extreme ownership, and I didn't. Then I said, okay, where are the opportunities that the players had to take extreme ownership, and they didn't. And that became the kind of the motto for rebuilding for this 24-year.
That's great.
Through recruiting, through our communication with our players, through my interactions with the community, through my interactions with, you know, personnel and staff here on campus, and that has really kind of rebirth the fire that's, you know, needed to get ready for the next year. And it was that book by a Navy SEAL in a military, you know, background that really helped me become a better leader, which in turn should help me become a better football coach.
Sure.
It helped our players become better people because it wasn't, well, he messed up or I did this. It was, okay, I did everything that I thought I could do, but obviously it wasn't enough. What more can I do?
Yeah.
And what it really does is it creates a sense of complete and holistic improvement because you're not really looking at how good you did. You're looking at, okay, I thought I did good, but obviously I didn't. And you're constantly self-reflecting. You're constantly self, you know, kind of going back and evaluating what could I have done better.
Sure.
And then every issue that comes up, because you take extreme ownership, you don't just breeze over it with, oh, we'll be okay. We'll win anyway. Or, they'll figure it out. You really take a deep dive into fixing every issue, positive and negatively. So now you have better connectivity throughout the entire organization.
So let me go back and hit on a couple points that you made. First of all, success can breed complacency, mm-hmm. right? You know, we see the same thing as well. Our wing has a long history of high performance, be it in deployments and the kudos that we get from the people that we work with and the organizations we work for, the accolades that the unit has received throughout its history have just been incredible. The history of performance from major command inspections, be it readiness inspections or our unit efficiency inspections, have always been high marks. The problem with sustained success like that is people get used to it, especially as the kind of more mature and experienced individuals of your organization who then retire and leave. The younger folks can sometimes not fully understand or have fully encapsulated all the work that is required to perform at that level.
Correct.
And it can lead to a sense of complacency. And it's something that we battle all the time. And some of the ways that we do that is we bring outside organizations in to look at us. Not just from a big perspective, like from the wing as a whole, but we have each section do it themselves. So if you're in finance or aircraft maintenance or security forces, you're going to bring in counterparts from outside the organization to look at you. We also have a rigorous self-inspection program that we do. And really what we're trying to do is beat back that complacency and to ensure that we maintain a high level of readiness and a high level of compliance when it comes to all the things that are being asked of us. It's very tough. I'll tell you that right now.
Trust me, I get it.
Yeah. So the other thing you touched on that I really liked is you talked about values. And, you know, the Air Force, we have our core values: integrity first, service before self, and excellence in all we do. But within the 130th Airlift Wing, we also focus on what we call the three R's, which is readiness, respect for others, and responsiveness to change. So those kind of encapsulate who we are from a value proposition and what we ask of our airmen. And, the vision that you put together when it came to extreme ownership resonates, I think, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but it's all the way through your organization, right?
Yes.
Even your equipment managers.
Yep.
Who are doing arguably some of the most mundane tasks.
Yep.
Within your football program.
Mm-hmm.
For them to embrace the fact that, hey, you know, how well I do my job impacts performance on the field.
Correct.
And to take ownership of those aspects and knowing that they're supporting those elite athletes that are out there, you know, performing every weekend. You know, we ask our people to do the same thing. And that's one of the lessons that I want them to, you know, our listeners to take away from this, how important it is to take ownership of your part in that team. And recognize that anytime you find yourself going, oh, well, that's somebody else's job, mm-hmm. you're wrong, like yep. flat out. You know, when it comes time to do things such as setting up tables and chairs, hey, everybody, you know, yep. let's go grab a table, let's go grab some chairs, let's get it done quick. And not everyone does that.
Mm-hmm.
And so let me, since you've touched on extreme ownership a little bit, let me ask you this. Recognizing that the transfer portal brings new faces in every season, how do you deal with someone who says, well, I wasn't here last season. You know, I don't own our 6-7 record last year. I'm the new guy. How do you sell this extreme ownership to that individual that's coming in? How do you message it, and how do you get them to have buy-in into what you're doing?
Yeah, well, I compare it to marriage, and I tell them, if you marry into a crazy family, you're a part of that crazy family, and I try to explain it to them, and two things. One, I explain it to them, you know, from you're joining this family, right? So if yeah. you're going to marry into, you know, the royal family, whether you are, you know, royalty or not, you have now become a part of the royal family. If you marry into a family that's got, you know, issues, well, you have now become a part of that. Does not mean that you are that, but it means now that you're responsible for managing your part of that.
Sure.
Secondly, I try to get them to understand, okay, because you chose here, there was something about this program that fit you. So because this shoe fits you, yes, you have to wear the shoe with the sole that's wearing out because it's the one that fits you. What your responsibility is how can you come in and, one, manage your piece and improve what this family has become. So, okay, if I'm marrying into the royal family, I may not become the king, but I still have a role and I still have a part in upholding the royal family traditions, the royal family values, the royal family, you know.
And mission.
And mission, correct. Same thing. If I marry into a crazy family, I have a role in managing my part of it, okay? I can't let it affect my house, my kids, my wife. And then I've got to try to improve it. How do I do that? I take a bigger role in communication. Maybe there is communication issues between, you know, my wife and their parents or my wife and her brother, whatever it may be.
Mentor nieces and nephews.
Mentor nieces and nephews. What can I do to manage my piece? What can I do to improve my piece? And ultimately, what I get them to understand is, if you can do those things, you can manage your peace and you can improve, you're going to create greater value for yourself.
Yes.
Because you're going to live a happier life because there's going to be less drama. If you just say, yeah, that's the crazy side of the family, I don't deal with them, well, it's going to affect you. So you're not going to be able to create as much value for yourself. If you say, yeah, I'm married into the royal family, but I don't do that that tradition that they do, ultimately you're missing out on the opportunity to create value for yourself. What I found is it's easier for people to take extreme ownership when they see how it directly benefits them. Hmm. All of us are selfish by nature. That's just what we are.
Sure.
There's a lot of people that have big hearts. There's a lot of people that have, you know, giving spirits. But ultimately, you know, Maslow's, you know, hierarchy of needs, we're ultimately all looking for self-actualization, right? We're looking for to make sure ourselves are fine first. Typically, once young men, especially in today's generation, once they realize what it can do to benefit them, they're more willing to help and buy in and become a part. When they feel like they're giving, and they don't see a return for them, then they have a limit on how much they'll give. I'll meet with this, you know, rookie and watch film with him, coach, but, I mean, I got to go do whatever I need to do. Well, if you meet with him a little bit longer, maybe – he'll create a play that gives you an opportunity to make a play. Mm-hmm. Oh, wait a minute. Okay, so if I'm the quarterback and I meet with this receiver a little bit longer, maybe when I throw him the ball, he'll actually catch it. He'll be in the right area. He'll understand what he needs to do, which ultimately helps my stats.
Is it about building trust too?
It's about building trust, but it's also, in my opinion, it's about seeing both sides of the coin.
Yep.
Right? You know, I can trust you as long as I know what the benefit is for you, what the benefit is for me. Now we can work to a common goal.
Yep.
Working together, the byproduct of that is building that trust. Now I know I've spent X amount of hours with this receiver, and I know that he's going to be in the right area. And if he's not, I know I got to spend more. If I'm taking extreme ownership of it, I'm not saying, coach, get him out of here. He can't do it. He's not in the right area. No, it's, hey, let's meet again tonight. You know, let's get together again tonight because obviously you still don't understand or there's some confusion. Hey, let's walk through it. Let's talk through it. Let's watch it. So now the byproduct of that seeing both sides of the coin is now we build trust. Hopefully, when we go out in this 24 season, hopefully the byproduct of that is we have more collective success, which yes, ultimately promotes individual growth, individual accolades, individual opportunities to go on to the next level, all of those things. So through the extreme ownership, through the buying into this new family that you've married into, teaching these young men coming out of the portal or showing them, okay, this is how it's going to benefit you, but you've got to do this first in order to get that benefit.
I love it. You know, that's so good. So, you know, I know as we've come through the building and I got the opportunity previously to look through your locker room, you gave us a tour and I see these signs on the wall. You talked about some ways. How do you communicate and message this to your players? Like how do you physically, how do you communicate your vision to them?
Yeah, I'm probably different than a lot of, you know, coaches. I am not a billboard operation. I don't believe in having too much signage or too much messaging.
Okay.
I believe in having a very consistent and direct message. So in our building, there's only three signs. Well, actually, two of them are the same, so it really kind of encompasses two signs. We have our core values listed in our team room, you know, which are positive attitude, unbelievable work ethic, compete in everything you do, and discipline. Those, we got them on both walls, so that's two, right? So our core values. So ultimately, we've built our core values to encompass all areas of their life, not just football. So the other sign that we have in our staff room is extreme ownership. Mm-hmm. To me, if you have a very intentional messaging with your signage, it will hit home. If your signage is like billboards, you can ride on the highway for 3-4 hours, and you'll pass 100 billboards. You might remember one.
Yep.
You might remember the one that had a funny slogan, or you might remember the one that had a good picture on it. But if you rode for 3 hours on the highway and you saw the same billboard over and over and over and over the entire drive, when you got home or when you got to your destination, you'd be like, man, Jesus is real. because that would be the one you saw. So my goal or my attempt is not to overload them with messaging. My attempt is to be very intentional about what they see, so that way, regardless if they see our core values on the wall before a game, after a game, big win, big loss, before a test, after a test, girlfriend broke up with them, dog died, family issues, whatever it is, they can always go back to ultimately what our core values are and help them fix that problem. The reason I've put extreme ownership in our staff room is because I want all of our commanders, in theory, all of our coaches, all of our staff, all of our assistants, to see that sign and understand when we come in our staff room, I have to take extreme ownership over my position or my role. Mm-hmm. Regardless of how I feel today, regardless of if we won, regardless of, hey, the offense did really, really good today, the defense didn't do great, or, our administration staff did a really good job in setting up, the recruiting visit or whatever it is. Regardless of what I've done, regardless of what's going on in my life, I'm working here at Marshall, but, I got a sick kid at home, or I'm working here at Marshall and, I've got to help my family this weekend. Whatever it may be, I've got to take extreme ownership over my role. I believe if you are very intentional about your signage and messaging, it'll hit home.
Yep.
If you overload them, it's kind of like, again, riding down the highway. You see one billboard, you see another, you probably passed 10 you didn't even pay attention to because your mind was somewhere else.
Yes.
So that's our method. And ultimately, those are the things that I talk about when there are positive situations or negative situations. Are we still reflecting our core values, like you talked about, the three R's? Regardless of if we executed the mission perfectly or we failed, are we still attached and are we still striving for our three R's? And if we can do that, then ultimately we'll be able to fix whatever issue it is. We'll be able to celebrate our successes but still get back to work. We'll be able to learn from our defeats but still get back to work. We'll be able to manage outside areas of our life and still own our roles.
Yep.
And ultimately, hopefully, that will create that sustained success.
I love that simple and direct approach. To a certain degree, we've taken a similar approach. For example, our wing's strategic plan, like if you would look at a lot of our counterparts throughout the Air National Guard or the Air Force, and you look at their strategic plan, many times they're 15, 20 pages. Well, your average airman's not going to read it.
Right.
They're just not. So you've got to simplify things and deliver content that is they're able to consume in a repeated fashion, as you're talking about. So our strategic plan is one page, and there's not a lot of words on it for a strategic plan. It's also one that hasn't changed a lot over time. Why? Because, number one, if you're changing your strategic plan every year, it's not strategic. Mm-hmm. So, what we ask of folks to do is relatively simple, but we ask them to do it at a very high level. And going after what you were saying with extreme ownership, I could see very easily if I apply extreme ownership to the core values of the Marshall football program, that means I have to deliver an unbelievable work ethic every day. So, hey, we just won a football game. We're coming off a win. Man, I had a great game. I scored two touchdowns. I had so many receptions. I'm feeling really good about myself. Well, when I come into the next practice, Extreme ownership means I need to show up early.
Correct.
I need to put in extra time. I need to give knowledge to the younger people coming up behind me mm-hmm. and say, hey, I had a lot of success this weekend. Here's what worked well for me. Mm-hmm. Why don't you try it? Hey, let's do some routes together. Let's work out together.
You want to coach our wideout?
But, you know, I can see the value of that. And, you know, the same thing applies for us. If you're, you know, changing a tire on an aircraft or you're repairing an engine or you're going to fly, embracing every aspect of the mission that you're performing and how it contributes to the wing's overall mission is extremely important. We also ask people to be accountable for their actions. So extreme ownership means when you mess up, mm-hmm. you own it. Mm-hmm. And you'll see, for example, if you ever came up to fly with some of our air crew members and you go through their debriefing, after they fly, every air crew conducts a debrief. And they talk in a very open, non-attributional fashion about what went wrong and what went right. And as air crew, you're expected to evaluate your own performance and to accept evaluations from others. And that can be things like, hey, when I turn from base to final, I turn too soon. Or I carried too much airspeed over the threshold, whatever the case may be. But you're expected to critique yourself and to accept feedback from others to continuously improve. Mm-hmm. And that's part of that extreme ownership. And that applies itself throughout all of our career fields. So I love your message all the way, and I really want to tell you how much I think it resonates with our members. So I've got kind of one more question for you, Coach. And, you know, we have a lot of similarities in what we do, and one of the similar aspects is that we bring both football coaches and military leaders. We bring young people into our organizations. That's who we're recruiting, is those 18, 19, 20-year-old individuals that makes up the bulk of our new recruits. And when they come into the organization, we ask them to do things like to uphold standards that they're not used to, mm-hmm. to exhibit certain types of behaviors, professional behaviors, that they may not be used to doing. How do you handle, within a football program, situations like that? How do you talk to young people to get them to understand what your expectations are of them from professional behavior? Because, I mean, they're coming to college for the first time, right?
Correct.
And they're going to be surrounded by temptations mm-hmm. that, you know, don't support extreme ownership mm-hmm. of their participation in this program. How do you handle things like that, and what's your message to those young people?
Well, one of the things we try to do is use our leaders, and in today's generation, and I'm talking in the athletic world, the word leadership is very scary because young men in today's generation, because they have everything on their phones, because they have their own brands, everybody's got their own social media, it's, I'm gonna worry about me. You know, I'm not going to worry about telling Johnny what to do. When I played, if the leader said run through the wall, everybody just ran through the wall. You didn't ask any questions. It was the way it is. Now, if someone says run through a wall, there's going to be two guys that pull up a YouTube clip of why we shouldn't run through a wall. There's going to be another guy that pulls up a TikTok picture of crazy people running through a wall and getting hurt and say we shouldn't do this. So I try not to use the word leaders. I talk about leadership responsibilities.
Okay.
Right. So I tell these guys, you don't have to be a leader. You don't have to take on the role or the weight of leadership. You don't have to go over there and get him out of bed to get him here. You don't have to go over there and tell him to run faster. Leadership responsibilities mean you do what you're supposed to do. And then that way, me as the leader, I can point to you as this is how we do things. Because, again, these kids in today's age, everyone's on their phone. Everything is visual. So if they can see what our culture, if they can see what our behavior looks like, if they can see what our decorum is, if they can see some of our basic, you know, fundamental, you know, pieces to the program, then it's easier to say, okay, I see what that looks like and I see what I'm doing. That's different. So I ask our leaders to have leadership responsibilities. The other thing we try to do is we try to surround them around guys who have those qualities that we're looking for. So if we have a young kid who's, you know, maybe from, you know, the South, and, you know, there's another guy from the South that's a leader on the team, we try to pair them up in a mentorship, not a leadership, but a mentorship. How do we do that? In our locker room, obviously there's 125 lockers in there. So we try to strategically place guys in the locker room near or around guys who they have either like-minded, you know, abilities, meaning he's older, you're younger, you're from the same area. Hey, you know, you should follow him.
Okay.
Or what we try to do is we try to go completely outside of the circle and we pair you with someone who you have zero connectivity or zero likeness, right? So we put an O lineman next to a DB. We put a white kid next to a black kid. We put a kid from the North next to a kid from the West. And typically what happens in those settings is your differences become your similarities.
Yeah.
Because ultimately we're all the same people. Yeah, you may listen to rap music, I may listen to country music, but we both like music.
Sure.
And typically what happens in those settings is you start to develop more leaders and you allow these newcomers or you allow people to start to learn more about a person next to them, which may ultimately change or adjust their behavior because now I have a better understanding. I didn't like country music, but every day in the locker room, this guy's jamming to Jason Aldean. Let me hear that. Okay, it's not bad. You know, maybe I don't love it like you do, but now I've got a different appreciation.
Sure.
And we do that, and what typically happens is guys get out of cliques. Cliques are usually what displays the same behavior because you hang out with guys that do the same things you do. You get out of cliques, and you get more of a team mentality because now it's not, hey, the three of us from – you know, California hang out and we surf and we, you know, we listen to the same music. It's, well, I know those three guys from California, but, you know, I just became really good friends with this guy from Ohio. So typically what happens is in those settings is through the differences, we get complete buy-in because all of a sudden your differences have become our similarities and our similarities have become our culture. Our culture has become who we are, and ultimately that's how we perform. So that's what we try to do. It's different. You know, it's different because, again, kids these days really don't have leadership want. They don't want to be leaders. And typically it's hard to lead a peer because in today's world it's, well, you ate pizza last night, so why are you on me about my weight? You know, so what we've done is we've kind of subliminally created leadership so where the kids can feel comfortable being themselves, which will help those new guys kind of adapt to how we do things.
Oh, it's very interesting. You know, one of the things that we try to do, and it's part of those, you know, kind of core values for the wing that I mentioned is, you know, respect for others. Our differences, you know, we should celebrate, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone comes into our organization with different backgrounds, different experiences. Fundamentally, we are an amalgamation of our experiences. Mm-hmm. That's where our likes and dislikes come from because of what we've been exposed to and what we found pleasurable or enjoyable. And meeting someone new who has a completely different experience than you do and listening to their story and getting to know them and getting to know you know, how those experiences have shaped who they are can be extremely enlightening, but you got to be open to it.
Correct.
And, you know, one of the things that we try to do is encourage people to have an open mindset that because you're going to have culture clashes, you're going to have differences of opinion, you're going to have, you know, moments of strife. But ultimately, there's a set of standard professional behaviors that we expect of everyone. And fundamentally, we all share the same mission. And we're working towards the same goal. And, you know, people come together through battle. Mm-hmm. When an airman deploys for the first time, it's always interesting to watch when they come home, because it has changed them. And what has changed is, one, they dealt with adversity, right? Mm-hmm. They've dealt with an environment that might be hostile to them. They've dealt with hardship. They've had to work with new groups of people and collectively come together. And when they come home, they're better for it. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting to watch. And I'm sure that you experience the same thing with a football program, that, you know, once you hit that gridiron, right, and once your, you know, full contact is happening with an adversary, you know, those little differences fade away. Mm-hmm. And those little arguments or gripes that you have with each other disappear
quickly.
And, you know, fundamentally, a lot of that's very similar to us. You know, one of the things, just to kind of wrap up some of our conversation here, that I really appreciate, and this is why I'm doing this, all right? So in the Air Force, we have a lot of regulations. And most of our regulations are really lengthy. For example, the dress and appearance regulation that dictates how we wear our uniforms is almost 300 pages. And our regulations typically will tell people the what, they'll tell people the why, and they'll tell them the how. Like, our dress and appearance reg says this patch has to be here, it has to be worn in a certain way, your hat has to be worn in a certain way, etc. When it comes to command and the responsibilities for command, I think you would agree command is important, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. It's an important role for a leader. The regulation for responsibilities of command is AFI 1-2. It's 6 pages.
And our football players wouldn't get that.
That includes a cover page and a glossary in the back. So it's really about 3.5 pages of content. And the reason why it is that way is the regulation covers some of the what and a little bit of the why, but it doesn't cover the how at all. It talks about things like the art of command. And, you know, command and leadership, there's a little bit of science to it, but there's a lot of art that mm-hmm. comes in it as well. I appreciate you talking to us today, Coach, because you've helped me share with our audience a little bit of art in how the Marshall football program comes together. And I think there's a lot of really good lessons that we can take away from this. I also wanted to let you know, I don't know if you know this or not, but the Marshall University football program and the West Virginia Air National Guard, we have a shared history of rising above great tragedy to achieve heights of excellence. Similar to the Southern Airways crash in 1970 that took the lives of 75 Thundering Herd players, coaches, supporters, and crew, 21 members of the West Virginia Air National Guard based in Charleston, West Virginia, were killed when their plane crashed in bad weather on April 8, 1951. They were returning from a mobilization base in another state to attend the funeral of a fallen airman. Like Marshall University, who famously rebuilt their football program around the Young Thundering Herd and went on to eventually win national championships in 1992 and 1996, the 130th Airlift Wing has gone on to achieving its own record of accomplishments through multiple deployments in the service of our nation and being awarded the Air Force Outstanding Unit Award 7 times. So in honor of the legacies of both of our organizations and the history that we represent and the people who came before us, Coach, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. It's been a wonderful conversation.
No, I thank you guys. And again, I am a military aficionado as far as research. I won't say I know everything, but I research a lot because I do have a lot of respect for the parallels of what you guys do and how important a team is and how important being detailed and how important is being organized and how important executing at a high rate collectively, you know, parallels with sports, you know, and it's probably, you know, in this world, it's probably the two most paralleled, you know, items, you know, as far as you guys have a very specific goal and there's consequences when, you know, members of the team aren't able to execute at a high level. Yes. Same way we have a very specific, you know, set of goals and there's consequences when guys are, you know, are not able to execute at a high level. And then there's people who are ultimately responsible for the masses.
Yes.
And their decisions, their approach, their consistency, their ability to explain, their ability to effect change, Their ability to get multiple different backgrounds and areas of people to work together for a common goal. So I have a lot of respect for you guys as a person, as an American, as a member of this great country, and then two, as a leader as well, who knows the challenges, who knows the moments of brief enjoyment, because you go right back to what's next.
Yep.
And sometimes as a leader, you don't really get a chance to enjoy the work that has been put in to get you to, you know, to the finish line, because you're looking for the next mission or you're looking for the next goal. So I have a lot of respect, a lot of admiration, and I appreciate you guys having me on. This is truly an honor. No disrespect to any other podcast, but this is the most honorable moment of my podcast career. So I thank you guys.
Well, on behalf of our airmen, thank you very much for your kind words. And, you know, invitations always open. Come up and visit us. We love to show you around, awesome. Let you meet some folks. So
awesome. Same to you guys. Coach. Anytime you guys want to come to a game, you guys are more than welcome to come and check out the herd and support the herd.
Well, thank you. Good luck this year.
Thanks, guys. Go herd.
And that's going to do it for this episode of The Drop. For more information about the 130th Airlift Wing, visit us on the web at www.130aw.ang.af.mil. Additionally, you can find us on all major social media platforms. Lastly, you can see us in the skies, delivering freedom with courage. This is Senior Master Sergeant Eugene Crist reminding you to stay ready to go.